From the American Tobacco Historic District, this is the State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Tarboro, a historic town in eastern North Carolina, dedicated to preserving its heritage in many, many ways. It's a charming downtown. It has a charming downtown district. And you will find there colonial architecture, a town commons. People still gather there in the southern tradition. Very traditional. So, perhaps surprisingly last year, Tarboro became home to a non-traditional medical facility, the Quiglis Natural Health Center. The center takes a holistic approach to healing. It offers services like therapeutic massage, nutritional food preparation, and clinical aromatherapy. It's operated by Carol Quiglis, a certified alternative therapist who wanted to provide integrative medical options for the folks of Tarboro, a community where obesity, hypertension, and diabetes are prevalent. Carol may be breaking traditions of Western medicine with her healing practices, but the site where the health center is located houses a lot of personal history for her. 6 decades ago, Carol's father, Dr. Milton Quiglis, opened the first clinic in Tarboro that served the town's African-American residents on that very spot. Carol learned a lot about curing a community from her father, and today she's continuing the family tradition in a non-traditional way. Carol Quiglis is my guest this hour on The State of Things. Welcome to the program.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
I want to find out a lot about your practice, but I do want you to take us back to your father and the origins of the place where you now practice. Your father was one of the first African-American doctors in Tarboro, opened the clinic in 1946. What brought him to eastern North Carolina?
The beauty. Straight up the beauty. He had, during med school, to put himself through med school, he was a Pullman porter, and at one point he also was a trombone player in a minstrel show, the Rabbit Foot Minstrel Show, and they traveled around, southern United States, and they went to Greensboro, North Carolina, and he just thought North Carolina was totally beautiful, so he vowed that one day he would come back and set up shop there.
Originally from Mississippi.
Port Gibson,
Mississippi. And you talked about himself putting himself through med school. He worked very hard. He was dedicated, but not always a dedicated student in his earliest years in school.
That is right. That is right. He was a fifth grade dropout, actually.
Yeah.
Early on, he was a puny one in the family. He had, lots of brothers and sisters. And he was a puny one. And, they just thought that, he just wouldn't do well physically.
And there are actually news accounts of him and his career that have been taken together, and you now show a DVD at the clinic as part of the exhibit there. And there's a great quote that I want to play right now that talks about his decision to leave school at an early age.
And they came and told me I didn't have to go to school unless I wanted to. What the hell? What they want to tell me that for? I went going fishing every day, having a good time, everybody else in school, and I was laughing at the kids. school only went through the 9th grade, and 5 years later, I was at the graduation where these kids were graduating, and I was supposed to be there with them. And all of a sudden, it occurred to me that I had messed up.
That is Dr. Milton Quiglis, the father of my guest today, Carol Quiglis. I wonder, when I saw that and heard that and then knew that he put himself through med school, I wonder how much his realization about the importance of education came to him in that moment. Unlike kids who may have just gone through and then met all the obstacles that African Americans would have in the 1940s with a good education, being told as they were by the rest of society, thanks for your hard work, but we don't need you. How much do you think his determination came from that realization at that moment?
Well, that moment of realization came from a culmination of other realizations along the line. There's also, he always said that early on, he wanted to be a doctor. There's a story that he tells in his upcoming autobiography that when he was very young, he went flying into the house or someone's house, and they shoot him out of this room, out of this bedroom, and this woman was having a baby, a childbirth at home, but he managed to poke his head in there anyway, and he saw these two twins, he saw these twins being born, but one was stillborn, and the other one was alive. And from that moment, he thought that was the most incredible thing, and he wanted to be a doctor. But then, as time went on, he, lost sight of that, and as you just heard, became the fifth grade dropout. And then, I think, at that moment, that memory plus realizing that he had quote-unquote messed up, that he had better get on it and do something. In terms of, you know, your statement a minute ago about, thank you, but we don't need you, they really needed doctors so bad then. I mean, just so badly then. Until there was a lot of that in itself was inspiration of, you know, knowing that it was service that was just so badly needed. And also, he did get encouragement from his family from that point on.
But of course, we're talking about a segregated South, so he was not allowed to practice at Edgecombe Hospital, which was the predominantly the white hospital in Tarboro.
Right, right. They had, back then, the colored ward, but the service wasn't very good. And he was not granted operating privileges there. So, you know, that was sort of useless. So he did, I grew up with stories of him doing surgeries on kitchen tables, delivering babies. He lost a lot of people because there just wasn't the facility, you know, for surgery. He did a whole lot of house calls. And eventually he did, soon after he got to Tarboro, the story is that he arrived with $7 in his pocket, and he gave $5 to the church, and then he kept $2 for himself. But he found lodging, and he found help, finally, buying an old fish market that he converted with the help of some of his patients. He converted that into a day office. But still, there was no place he could do surgery.
And the situation for African Americans there was pretty serious because I think the last black doctor there had died, 6 years earlier?
Right. Right, so, Dr. Porter, yeah.
So tell us what happened then. He gets to Tarboro, he's donated $5 of his $7, and now he's got to get this fish market, turn it into a clinic. How'd that go?
Well, it went pretty well. At first there was, you know, we don't know you, where'd you come from kind of thing. But then again, there was, oh, we have a doctor here. So some people did rally to the cause and help him convert the fish market into his private practice office. Patients made curtains and, you know, just helped him paint it and you know, pull it all together. But over time, obviously that wasn't good. You know, it just was not adequate. The need for a hospital was just right in your face. So, I mean, and the making the house calls, you know, that was just pretty drastic too. Throughout, you know, my growing up, he still went out on house calls, but there was a clinic or a hospital for people to be hospitalized in, you know, to get the care.
And that clinic was filled pretty much from the day the
from
doors
day
opened,
one.
Right?
From day one.
So what did he do for support, nurses and other kind of support? He was the only doctor, right?
Well, that was interesting too. Back then, you could train the nurses, have them pass the board. A lot of times people, you know, there might have been a nursing school in Raleigh. I forget the name of it right now, that African Americans could go to. But a lot of the staff, he trained himself down at the clinic. He trained the lady who counted out the pills from the dispensary. He trained the OR nurse, Mrs. Shirley Mays, who also did the lab work. He had to have all these things. I mean, just like a regular hospital, the lab, the x-ray room. He trained someone else to do the x-rays. You teach them, you have them take the boards, then they're in. My mother had a lot to do with the training as well. She wasn't a nurse, she wasn't a doctor, but she had been a school teacher, so she knew how to drill it in your head.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of that was on-the-job training. Immediately, pull up your sleeves and get to work.
And you and your brother and your sister had a lot of on-the-job training, too. You worked there a little bit, didn't you?
Yeah, we all worked there. I worked as a receptionist as soon as I was capable. I guess that was when I was about 12.
Mm-hmm.
And all of us took our turns down there.
You saw quite a bit.
Hmm?
You saw quite a bit then.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. One of my, I was, you know, used to running up and down the hallways and visiting patients, you know, cheering them up a little bit. They liked to see a little person come in and act cheerful, and I was happy to do that. And one of my earliest memories was crawling around the floor and I came up against this jar. Yeah, it was a pretty, very tall jar, and I couldn't figure out what it was. And then all of a sudden it dawned on me that it was a leg. And that was pretty weird. That was pretty weird. I don't remember what happened next, but I just remember just the shock of realizing that was a leg. And a lot of people today don't remember him doing surgery, but they remember him later on after he realized that, you know, at some point he wasn't going to be able to do surgery. He wasn't going to be able to do surgery, and he became expert in dermatology. But early on, he had to do a lot of surgery, where it was cutting off legs, where it was doing cesarean sections, taking out tonsils, appendectomies, whatever. They were general practitioners back then, and you had to pretty much do a lot of everything.
You had to do it all. Well, I want to find out how all of that tracked with you and what thoughts were going through your mind about your own future as our conversation continues today. We're talking with Carol Quiglis, daughter of the late Dr. Milton Quiglis of Tarboro. Carol recently transformed her father's historic clinic into a center for alternative therapy and integrative medicine. Just ahead, we'll learn about her decision to carry on the family's tradition of healing by an alternative route. On the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, it's a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned.